Perek Yud Beis, when it describes Avram going through the land of Israel, Vayisa Avram Haloch V'Nasoa HaNegba. Avram traveled continually traveling in a southward direction. The Rav says, Avram entered Canaan from the north, the most fertile part of the country. Now Avram was a shepherd and needed land for pasture. Why then didn't he settle in one of the northern valleys? Rashi answered that Avram was moving towards Yerushalayim, towards Jerusalem. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim, it pulled him toward the south. Avram was instinctively attracted to Kedusha, the way a bee is attracted to the nectar of the flower. And what happened? Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz. There was a famine in the land. Why did Hashem cause a famine to develop in the land, forcing Avraham to go to Mitzrayim so soon after his arrival in Canaan? Rashi says that the purpose was linasoso, to test Avraham, to see how he would react to the Mitzri culture and civilization. Would he be overwhelmed and succumb to the Mitzri society, to its ideals, its philosophy, its views? Or would Avram resist and emerge triumphant, keeping his faith? Avram had to go to Mitzrayim to see what Mitzrayim was. It was fascinating at that time, and it was very attractive. Hashem later repeated the test twice more, with Yaakov in Haran and with Yosef in Mitzrayim, to show that a Jew can live in exile, in the Gullus, and still retain his spiritual identity, either in poverty as a day laborer or shepherd, that was the case with Yaakov, or in wealth and riches and luxury as the prime minister of a foreign country, which was the case with Yosef. The Torah describes how Hashem tested the patriarchs because these tests were characteristic and indicative of the destiny of their descendants. Avraham came out of Mitzrayim, not only retaining his identity, but even more powerful spiritually. So it says the following, Kasher hikriv lavo. Hikriv is the hifil, that he drew himself near to come. You know, when Pharaoh was pursuing the Jews, this is later when the Jews, of course, left Mitzrayim, during the Exodus, the Torah describes using the hifil form, right? Paro hikriv instead of karav. According to Rashi, the intransitive karav may be replaced by the corresponding the hifil, the causative form, in order to amplify the action. Paro was so motivated to bring the Jews back to Mitzrayim that he made a special effort to catch up with them as quickly as possible. Here too, in Perek Yud Beis and Lech Lecha, Avraham had to make a special effort because he wanted to stay in Eretz Yisrael. He had to compel himself to leave the land. However, it is also true that Egypt or Mitzrayim attracted Avraham. Mitzrayim was the metropolis of the Middle East, the seat of a developed technology and civilization. Her influence was powerful. If Mitzrayim were to join Avraham, the redemption of mankind would be achieved very quickly because it was the heart of civilization. Avraham had not succeeded in persuading the people of Chaldea, meaning what we call today Iraq, Chaldea, Kazdim, Bavel, which was the second cultural center in antiquities. Nevertheless, Avram tried again in Mitzrayim, only to fail there too. There's two ideas in Hikriv. The one Hikriv is to force himself because of the famine. He didn't want to leave Canaan. He didn't want to leave Israel for Mitzrayim. The other is Hikriv because he thought he could transform the destiny of humanity, impact the great civilization. It says, Vayiru ha-Mitzrim es ha-Isha. Literally, the Egyptians saw the woman. Whenever Hashem addresses Avram about Sarah, Hashem always includes her name. Here, however, she is an anonymous woman. Her name is intentionally left out, as it is in the following verse, indicating that she was taken to Paro's home. The name Sarai means a princess, a very important woman. But she was a prominent person only as long as they were in Canaan. From the very moment they crossed the border into Mitzrayim, no one cared about her spiritual personality, her leadership, her status as a Nevi, as a prophetess. The Egyptians looked at women from only one perspective, whether they were physically attractive. After leaving Mitzrayim, it says, and this is already as we're getting into Perek, I apologize, we're in Perek Yud Gimel, okay? Vayal Avram mi Mitzrayim velot imo. So Avram comes out of Egypt, Lot is with him, but the term imo is Ayin Mem Vav. Lot, earlier in Perek Yud Beis, when Lot accompanied Avraham to Haran and then from Haran to Canaan, it describes the following. Lot's accompaniment of Avram was described as Vayelech Ito Lot. Not Imo, but Ito, Aleph Tuf Vav. The word Imo, Ayin Mem Vav, here has the connotation of accompaniment in only the physical sense, not in the spiritual sense as it did earlier when it said Vayelech Ito Lot. The relationship between Avram and Lot has now fundamentally changed. Lot was no longer a member of Avram's family. They no longer held common property as they did earlier. Avraham lost the first Talmud, the first student he ever had. Lot was dazzled, attracted by the material culture and wealth of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the most advanced country technologically, while Avraham was coming from a more primitive pastoral society. Lot was overwhelmed by the civilization of Mitzrayim and its technology, and he could not resist its influence. The acid test of the Jew is whether he can withstand the impact of an advanced material and technological culture that at the same time is morally and ethically very primitive. Avraham withstood the test, Lot did not. So it says that Avram came El Mekoma Mizbeach Asher Asa Sham Barishona. He came to the place of the altar that he had made when he had come from Haran, from Syria, into Canaan. Now, after having lived in Mitzrayim, being driven out of Mitzrayim, he comes back to the Mekom HaMizbeach Asher Asa Sham Barishona, which he had made at first. The disappointing experience in Mitzrayim, it did not discourage Avraham from pursuing his original goal. What was that? The total redemption and conversion of mankind. He returned to the site where he had built the altar before his journey to Mitzrayim, and there he again called B'Shem Hashem, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. He called on God's name. The universal idea was Abraham's lodestar. Persecution, ridicule, indifference, opposition, loneliness, none of these experiences discouraged him. It says now that with the great wealth that the two of them have accrued, meaning Avram and Lot, that they've brought back with them from Mitzrayim, Velo nasa osam haaretz lasheves yachdav. The land could not bear the two of them, Lot and Avraham, to dwell together. No feud, let alone one between people of higher caliber, like Avram and Lot, is precipitated by a mere shortage of pasture. After all, each had money and they could have bought more land. Surely there was enough land for sale. The trouble was that Avram and Lot could not dwell together spiritually. Avram and Lot did not have their old mutual respect and appreciation. The harmony was somehow affected in Mitzrayim. Lot now had different ideas and different dreams. It says, V'hakanani v'haprizi az yoshev ba'aretz. You know, at that time, the Canaanites and the Perizim, they were living in the land. If the shepherds had already noticed the tension and were starting to quarrel, then everyone in Canaan would soon know that Avram and Lot were at loggerheads. If the feud would be exposed, then Avram would have to debate Lot in the open. Avram would preach righteousness and justice, right? Tzedek u'mishpat, while Lot would preach something else. Avram would preach faith in one God, while Lot would preach idolatry. Avram did not want to further publicize the rift between Lot and himself in this manner, and that's why he suggested that they part company. Vayivchar lo Lot is called Kikar HaYarden. So what does Lot choose? He chooses the plain by the Jordan River. Bechira, Vayivchar, means giving priority to one thing over another. Lot understood Avram's greatness, but he did not want to follow in his footsteps. He understood that Avram's life was a dedicated one, that it entailed hardship and sacrifice. He loved Avraham, but in Sodom he saw another way of life, a comfortable life without sacrifice. Had Lot been an ethical personality, he would have recognized that it is not sufficient to love justice. One must condemn injustice. He would not have settled in Sodom, but Lot reconciled himself to the evil of the Sodomites. Give me just a few seconds. In the war with the four kings and the five kings, when Avraham pursues the four kings and is successful in freeing the POWs, he's described as Avraham HaIvri. Rashi explains the phrase Abraham, the Ivri, the Hebrew. Rashi explains that the term Ivri means that Avraham came from the other side of the river, Me'aver HaNahar, the other side of the Euphrates. Avram's origin was Ur Kasdim, right? The plain of Babylonia, of Iraq. He was an immigrant to Canaan. The question arises, however, why are the people described as Hebrews forever? Why is God called Elokei HaIvrim, the God of the Hebrews, in Perek Gimel of Shmos? Why does the prophet Yonah, for example, identify himself as an Ivri Anochi, I'm a Hebrew? Apparently the term a Hebrew, Ivri, is more than a geographical designation. Ivri became the symbol of Judaism, of the faith of our nation. According to the Midrash, Abraham is called an Ivri, a Hebrew, because he stands me'aver echad, on one side, while the rest of the world stands on the other side. Avram took the vision of the Creator, of a new world order, and a new morality, and thus separated himself from the rest of the world ideologically. His descendants continue to carry that title. The Jews have crossed many rivers, lived in many lands, but in a spiritual sense, we have remained rooted, me'aver anar, over the river, on the other side, with a heritage of sanctity and purity. Give me one second. It says, Umalki tzedek melech shalem hotzi lechem v'yayin. So, Malki tzedek, Rashi identifies as Shem, the great ethical monotheist, who really lived sort of an incognito life, after the great, incredible military victory of Avraham, where the world acknowledges this ethical monotheist Avraham, then everyone, so to speak, comes out. Then they all come out, you know, of their life of living incognito, and they come to acknowledge Avraham. So it says, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, which we define as Yerushalayim, he brought out Lechem V'yayin. In antiquity, a famished, victorious army on a march back from the battlefront, intoxicated with victory, saw nothing as sacred. Robbery, rape, murder, licentiousness, gluttony, all these acts were permissible. But Avraham's army was different. Coming back after weeks of fighting, the soldiers were famished and starved. On the way, there were many settlements, cities and villages, from which they could have gotten food if they had wanted. But no one touched anything. Malki Tzedek came out with bread and wine to feed the warriors. He understood what Avram had accomplished, and he came out to greet him. Rashi says that this was the way decent people would greet warriors who were famished from battle. And Malki Tzedek says about Avraham, Baruch Avraham Lekel Elyon. Blessed is Avraham to the Most High, to the God of the Most High. One would have expected the blessing here to declare Avraham to should be blessed by God, Me'el Elyon, not Lekel Elyon, but Me'kel Elyon. But Malki Tzedek uses the dative, blessed to God. This means, how do you understand that? This means that Avram's blessing had to reflect back upon God. Malki Tzedek's blessing was that Avram would succeed in his service of God, in his great endeavor to establish a new society and give man a code by which to live by and to act. All the blessings bestowed upon Avraham would be returned with dividends to God. Avraham would proclaim that God owns the world and that man is only an instrument in the hands of God to carry out and realize his will. So what's the idea of the Kel Elyon? He would take those blessings and he would dedicate them and consecrate them to the God of the Most High. Ubarach Kel Elyon. And then Malki Tzedek relates that God is blessed. Malki Tzedek first blesses Avraham and then blesses God. Should not the order have been reversed? To address this question, we must first understand the concept of blessing God in general. How can a temporal man, flesh and blood, you know, referred to as a fading flower, a broken shard, a fleeting cloud, how can that mere flesh and blood approach Melech Malchei Hamlachim, the everlasting King of Kings, the creator of the world, and bless him? The answer is that man must provide assistance, as it were, to the master of the universe. Man must help God to reveal his presence in the world. God told Avraham that your assignment is to make my presence known to the world. Avraham must dissipate the clouds that obscure God from human perception. Before Malki Tzedek blessed God, he first wanted to bless Avraham to be successful in spiritually conquering and transforming the world. Through Avraham's own success, God himself would also be blessed. Harimosi yadi el Hashem el kel elyon konei shamayim v'aretz. Avraham took an oath. Avraham took an oath that he would not take anything from the spoils of stone. What did he say? I raise up my hand to Hashem, the God of the Most High, the one who conquered the heavens and the earth. Kone shamayim v'aretz. This phrase, kone shamayim v'aretz, it refers to the fact that God gained ownership rights over the entire world by virtue of having created it. Jewish life and Jewish law revolve around this basic theme. Chana, the mother of the Navi Shmuel, she recognized Hashem's ownership over man himself and thus returned her son to God by committing him to his service, by raising him in a life where he would be a public servant. She acknowledged that Shmuel was on loan Shaul from Hashem, on loan from God. The concept also has halachic implications. As Beis Din has the right to foreclose on man's property under the principle of Hefker, Beis Din Hefker. For in reality, all property belongs to God. The only reason that they can be Mafker, someone's property, is because it's really not our property. Ultimately, it's God's property, Kone Shamayim V'aretz. By describing Hashem as Kone Shamayim V'aretz, Avram emphasized to the king of stone that he wanted no part of the spoils of war, since the king would have asserted that it was he and not God who owned them.